Welcome to UMBC's Mic'd Up podcast. My name is Denise Cardona from the Office of Professional Programs here at UMBC. Today, I want to welcome a very special guest onto the show, Mr. Donald Drummer. He is a current student in the Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Leadership Graduate Program at UMBC. Welcome, Donald.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself in terms of your educational journey to get to UMBC and maybe what brought you there?
Yes. So I'll start with educational and professional for that matter. My educational journey, I have an undergrad from the University of Texas at Austin, BBA, and I have an MBA from Kansas State University, and then a Master of Strategic Studies from the U.S. Army War College. So to make that make sense, I actually served in the military for 30 years. I retired. I was an officer. And then I went to the federal government as a civilian, as a senior executive service member. And I started my journey with the Transportation Security Administration as deputy director of the TSA workforce at JFK, John F. Kennedy Airport. And then I moved to become the director of the airport at Newark. And I had four airports. I had Newark, Trenton, Atlantic City, and Newcastle in Delaware. And then I moved to Washington, D.C. area, National Capital Region. I live in National Harbor and became the assistant administrator for the Office of Security Capabilities, translated as the Deputy Chief Technology Officer for TSA. So after 6 years of counterterrorism operations, I decided to move to the Federal Aviation Administration. And I became the director of the Aviation Logistics Organization, which was a totally different lane. I had a 6.4 million square foot lease portfolio around the country and about $7.2 billion in personal property assets and a fleet of vehicles around the country. And then I retired and I was asking myself, what's the best use of your time and talent? And I spoke to one of my sons. I'm married, by the way. I have a son that's a Catholic priest and pastor in Atlanta, Georgia. His twin brother is married to an attorney and lives in Chicago, and he's executive director of a think tank. And then I have a daughter here who just started to work for the federal government. She was in anti-money laundering and banking at first, but now she works for the federal government. And I asked my son in Chicago, I said, you know, I want to help underserved kids. That's where I think I need to move. And he said, Dad, if you want to serve underserved kids, the best thing you can do is teach them about economic opportunities and teach them to get in the economic game to be successful. That's what this country is made of. So I said, OK, let me look around. And let me back up. I got interested in renewable energy because of him, because his think tank is affiliated with the Green New Deal. Not quite, but partially. And they are contributors to what's going on now. And I went to hear him speak, and I heard a number of distinguished speakers. And he was also in the lineup. And I had a passion for solar energy. So I found a lane, utility scale solar energy, which is solar farming, and microgrid solar energy, where you can use smaller pockets of energy where you might not have to get on the grid. And I got connected with a developer. And with that developer, I found that they were great technicians, but needed some work on the business side. So I said, let me find a program that will help me understand the best way to do business. Because I know in small businesses, people go out of business in the first year, then five, then 10. And I said, I don't want to be a part of that process. And I'm a champion of structure, process, and efficiency. So I searched the internet, looked around, and found the UMBC program. I didn't want a program where I would be online. I wanted a program where I could spend time with students. And since I had a career behind me, I said, what a great opportunity to engage with young people, 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s for that matter, and see what they're learning and see what professors are teaching, and then apply my experience and knowledge to that as a filter. And I have to tell you, it's been an awesome experience. And what drew me to the UMBC program was the fact that it's called Entrepreneurship, innovation, and leadership, it's not just about conducting business. It's also about being creative, and it's about leading your organization and people and communicating. So it just fit perfectly when I looked at the curriculum. But then I got a bonus. Once I joined the program, I realized that every single one of my instructors, and I will complete at the end of this semester, 7 of the 11 courses. Every single one of them is an entrepreneur with experience and knowledge. And every single one of them don't have to be here teaching. They're adjunct professors. They're giving back. And that just moved me, because I've learned quickly. I live on the other end near DC, but in Baltimore, there is a significant footprint of underserved community members. And every single one of my professors has a link to serving society above and beyond what they do in their entrepreneurial journey. And then the sacrifice of teaching at night above and beyond what they're doing just means so much. So I get the best of all worlds at UMBC, and it's really been something special.
My goodness, that is just an amazing story, and I'm really inspired by it. First of all, I'm a graduate student in one of our UMBC professional programs as well, the Learning and Performance Technology graduate program. And one of the things that I love most, and you touched upon this, was that collaboration with other peers, be it that they're 20, 30, 40, and I'm in my 50s, and so I'm not really your traditional graduate student, but I am gaining so much knowledge and just looking at life through such a different lens, being able to see it through the lenses of somebody young, the millennials, the up and comings, then the ones who have like the 30, 40 year olds who have been in the world a little bit, and now they have this experience that is just so rich, and we're all able to share it with each other. And that's such a powerful thing when you can come together with a group of people and experience that camaraderie and that spirit of wanting to do better in the world. And doing that by learning and grasping what other people have been through. And when you take that and you mix that up together, magic forms, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And they've really opened up my aperture in the way I see things. I spent a lot of time, I've led people and managed operations for a number of years. I've built teams. I've solved problems or led the effort in solving problems. And we delivered results. And coming into this program, I'm finding there are some other creative ways to approach that. And it feels good to sit in class and listen and sit in class, but be participate in class and listen to some of the information shared by the professors, and the lights come on. It's like, yep, they're absolutely right. And I have to really constrain myself not to engage and allow the other students to absorb and receive a lot of it. However, there's a large percentage and a huge percentage that I gain above and beyond what I already knew. And mixing and matching what I know with what I'm learning is going to be tremendous for me.
Yeah. And you touched on the word listen. That is such a skill that is, it is so powerful to learn that skill, to actually listen. Because yes. A lot of people, myself included, I've struggled with that in the past, where I haven't listened to the extent where if I did, I would gain so much more knowledge and experience by just taking the time to listen and then actively ask questions based on that listening. And exactly. So that's a really powerful thing to be able to do. And I really enjoyed hearing you say, and I had to hold myself back, because, and that's so true, right? We want to participate, we want to, but it's really important to give other people that chance to maybe listen and absorb and voice what they've learned through their perspective. And then we gain from doing that.
Exactly. And the listening side, a lot of people assume when you're in the military, it's a one-way conversation. I tell you what to do and you execute, and that is not true. The military is a cross-section of society, and those are organizations all the way up the chain, from a platoon to a company, to a brigade, to a division. Those organizations have people in them. And the best way to solve problems is to get feedback from those who are executing the business. And I learned that as a young company commander, as a young captain, and I would, after every field problem, I would sit down and ask my privates, what would you have done differently? And wow, they had some great ideas, and I used them. I tease all the time. When I was with TSA, I joined the workforce in Newark that was in deep trouble. I mean, it was 1,500 employees, but they were not on the same page. And the leadership skills of the senior leaders wasn't as good as it should be. And when I joined the team, I let them know, and I teased, I said, "Hey guys, I have big ears. I listen. I want to know what you think about how we can improve and become one of the highest performing organizations in TSA." And in a 3.5 year period, we moved from number 450 in performance to number two. But I got feedback from people on the front lines, and I learned to empower leadership at multiple levels because the managers were driving the train and the supervisors didn't have a lot of input. And if the supervisors don't have the input, neither do the members on the front lines. So we kind of changed the game. But I just want to share with you the power of listening. Yes, and I had to learn to do that. But in the military, it's not one way, it is a two-way street. And those who are successful listen and learn.
Wow, yeah. It makes me think about how powerful it is when organizations are led by people who understand that the people, no matter what your position within a company, especially if you are, say, on the ground, rolling up your sleeves in the trenches, right? You're seeing the day-to-day, you see the problems as they're happening because you are the one doing that kind of nitty-gritty work. When management, when upper management, strategic managers actually ask for the opinion of people doing the work, those people feel empowered and they feel part of the solution. And so they want to do better. And I've experienced that on different levels, especially at the UMBC community. When leadership comes together, especially during COVID, and they wanted our intake, they wanted our input about how we can make this a better year for ourselves, being even though that we're separated from each other, how can we do better? And they wanted input from everybody. And it was such a, it's a spirit that lifts everybody up and you all just want to succeed together. And so that is very powerful. No wonder why you took it to number two. That's it's absolutely amazing. What a story that is. Wow.
And I'm glad to hear you share that because UMBC is really on the cutting edge of communicating well. Through COVID, I look at, I read everything that they put out, and it's like, wow, they're on top of it and they care and they keep everyone informed through multiple channels. And I said, okay, this is a high performing organization here for a lot of reasons. Now you help me understand. They got input from everyone before they put out their plans.
It's interesting because you mentioned that one thing that you were looking for in a program was not an online program, right? You were looking for an in-person. And of course, COVID hits, right? So this whole year has been online for you. You must be really looking forward to being able to get back in the classroom with your peers, with the faculty, right back on campus, I'm sure.
I am, but it's been a two-sided coin. I started my journey last spring. So this is my second semester. I went the spring and the summer, and then I took off the fall because I had a medical procedure. And then I restarted this spring. And we went until March 23rd, I think, the first time around. And I was driving 47 miles, one way, three times a week to get to class, but I enjoyed it. And then we made this transition, and it was good because at my age, I'm accustomed to video teleconferences, but as an executive, I didn't turn it on, I didn't turn it off, I didn't have to do anything. I showed up to the meeting after everyone had it set up, put out what I was going to put out, engage the way I was going to engage, and we moved on. And now I have to learn how to do things a lot differently. And it helped me get in the game on this technology that we have because I'm in a different generation. I didn't maximize this technology before. I just used it because it was required in what we were doing. So for me, it's been a two-sided coin. It's been a blessing and very helpful for me to learn technology and to learn how to engage and go into meeting rooms to get things done with people. And also learn that later on we can save money. We don't have to take all these trips across country to get things done.
Yeah, that's
Yes.
so true. What a savings it is for so many organizations that relied so heavily on putting their employees on airplanes and flying them around the world. They don't need to do that anymore, in a sense.
I will also share with you and give Mason's capstone course. I'm in Capstone 1 right now. And what we do on our business canvas is we can use stickies, but you can't do that if you're not physically present. So I'm having to learn how do you do a sticky? And I haven't broken the code yet. Others have. How do you do a sticky in a virtual format? So I'm working and learning through that process, and I'm not using stickies yet, but I like stickies. They work because it gives you an opportunity to be flexible and move things around. So I do miss that. And maybe in Capstone 2, by the time I get there, we'll be physically present where I can engage and have those relationships.
I completely understand the fascination and the need for stickies because, well, I have an office full of them. I'm holding one right now. And what I love about stickies, like you just said, it's flexible. You can move things around. If it doesn't work here, you can say, okay, let's try it here. And if it doesn't work here, let's try it here. Oh, wow. I didn't even think that it could work there. So it gives you a different way to look at things and view things and to learn how to be flexible and brainstorm and all of that kind of good stuff. And so you have not got to the stickies on, say, I think Microsoft Teams has sticky notes and things like that. I don't use them either, but virtually I don't use them. I'm much more of a paper, pen and paper type person when it comes to that.
Yeah, I've invested more time in the thinking part than trying to figure out how to make these stickies work. But I will, because it's a skill set and a tool that I would love to use. And I'm a Lean Six Sigma black belt, so I've used them before in business process improvement. And that's another thing I like about this program. It's about structure, it's about process, and it's about efficiency. And that's how you make things work in business, whether it's a social entrepreneurship or whether it's a profit-making entrepreneurship. And what I like, what I'm accustomed to is you get a lot of brilliant people in a room and they have popcorn thinking. They're all over the map with no focus, haven't defined the problem, and you just spin your wheels. And what I like about this program, it shows me that there's power in defining problems accurately, in building teams and empowering them to provide feedback and having some structure and some process and focus in solving problems and delivering results. So that's what I like about this program.
Yeah, I agree. There's a time and a place for that popcorn thinking. I love that term. I think I might borrow that from you now. I like that term. But so there is a time and a place for that. That's during a brainstorming type of session when you need ideas, thinking off the cuff, out of the box, and things of that sort. But there's a real value in that whole process thinking because, yeah, I'm right there with you. That having a process in place makes it replicable.
Yes.
And that's really important when you're in business sense. You want to be able to replicate what you just did. And you want to be able to do that over and over again, maybe tweaking here and there. That replicable ability is really important. Our programs are very applied in nature. Specifically, this particular program is very applied. Do you have an example, anything where you have taken what you've learned in the classroom on, say, Tuesday night, and then Wednesday, you went into what you do, your everyday job. You went there and you applied it somehow. That light bulb went off Tuesday night, and Wednesday you were like, I'm going to go there and do this and try it out. Has that happened yet?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I think I mentioned that to Gib one day. We were in class and we were on about 5 minutes early, and I told him that I was connecting dots. And it was making sense. I take a class now from Jeremy Steinberg in marketing, and we talked about the marketing funnel, marketing and sales funnel, and it directly applied to what I was doing and helped me understand a piece of the canvas when I talked about the marketing or the customer segments. And it just, the lights just came on for me. So there are things that I learn in each of the classes that are applicable to another class. And for me, of course, I'm processing a lot through my experience. Then I also get to process it through what I just learned in another class.
When you can apply it, that's just so powerful. Most of us learn by doing. And there is some theory, I'm assuming, but there's also that applied learning that you can just can take that right there to your place and show the value. Now, speaking of taking it to where you are right now, can you talk a little bit about what you are doing right now? You mentioned investing in solar farms. Is that accurate?
Solar farms is a sector of what I'm interested in. If I look at it, I'm going to use Canvas terms. So customer segments, the two customer segments I'm interested in is utility scale energy production, solar. And that's equivalent to a solar farm. So my twin brother has 43 acres in Texas. And I called him up and says, hey, what are you doing with that land? He says, paying taxes. And nothing else. And I said, okay, would you consider, you know, a solar farm opportunity, a utility scale solar power generation? He said, absolutely. So that's when I found a developer and we started to work the process. And I found just how complex it is. And of course, a lot of us now know in the news, there are regional regulatory entities that have an impact on how much you can put on the grid, whether you can get permits, and a number of things. And ERCOT is one of them. And it's a real slow process. So what I thought would be a 1 year to 1.5 year process could turn into a 3 to 5 year process because of all of the steps that are taken and all of the collaboration that is required. And in this case, the regulatory entities that influence how much you can put on the grid. And we wanted to do an 18 megawatt solar farm, but we're going to be limited to 10 because the grid, they want to regulate how much energy is distributed to the grid. So that's what we're working on. And it's a slow process. So I said, you know what? Why don't you put yourself in position to succeed when that process matures? Another piece of this is the developer that I'm working with has a patent process in progress. And if that patent is approved, it could potentially change the game on efficiency. Right now in the solar industry, the efficiency of translating or transforming sun energy into useful AC/DC energy is 15 to 18%. And it's been that way for about 10 to 15 years. The very max, I think, is 21%. Without getting into proprietary danger, I'll just say there will be some significant improvements if this patent is improved. And that means the infrastructure that's required, it takes about 5 acres for every megawatt that you want to produce. That's what it takes in infrastructure to get it done. So every bit of improvement, if you improve that by 30%, you reduce your footprint by 30%, which means you reduce the cost of capital associated with that, which means you reduce the price of energy, and on and on and on. So what I wanted to do was get in on the front end of this, and I'm not doing it to make money. My family and I, we're fine, and I'm retired. We're fine. But I want to produce a business legacy for my family. I have 2 grandchildren now, 1 3, and one turns four on Monday, and 1 is 1. And I want them to know that there's a possibility to be in business and to leave that family legacy. So the best use of my time would be there. And then similar to what our professors are doing and what UMBC is about in a lot of ways, I also want to give back. And I'm in a class right now with Carol Bogash called Creative Problem Solving and the Social Entrepreneur. And I took it because I wanted to replace another course so I could, you know, graduate when I wanted to graduate, having no idea what I would learn. So I've seen another angle. And I've seen an opportunity to use solar energy in a nonprofit organization to become an economic production platform to give back to society. And that's brand new. I haven't even put it out yet. And I will present that as one of my individual project in that course that we'll be presenting in a few weeks. Those are the kinds of things that just, and you can have for profit, but you can also do nonprofit and give back to society. And it gets back to what my son said, empower them economically, show them how to get in the game on the economic side of the house. And the way I look at solar energy is the gift that keeps on giving. There's a lot of money flowing into Baltimore in particular. And we're studying homelessness. And then if you look at homelessness, you have to break and look at poverty. And then if you look at the origins of poverty in Baltimore, wow, I just read a book called Not in My Neighborhood. Oh my gosh. And it has been so enlightening to see how that shaped what's happening in Baltimore. So we have all of this money coming from housing and urban development moving into Baltimore. We have just wonderful donors, foundations and businesses that donate money to make this happen. And my concern is that's all consumption. All of that, all those resources are consumed in the community to address poverty and homelessness. And a whole lot of popcorn thinking out there. And my question is, how can that be sustained? It's going to be very difficult. So why don't we find a way to use solar energy as an economic production platform to use those proceeds and revenues, net revenues afterward, to contribute back to the community, empower the community, and help them become more resilient in the long run. So that's an angle I'm taking, and I would have never thought of it had I not been in this program and taken that course with Carol. And I took another course from her called Learning Organizations last spring. So she puts you to work, but boy, do you learn.
I love Carol Bolgosh. We worked together on United Way. I did a video for her, class, Design Thinking, a whole project with the United Way of Central Maryland. And what an inspiring story that was. I was able to put together their stories. Several students, I think there were 5 students in this video talking about how it affected them. And that's what I love about this program and the UMBC community in general. We care about the community, and it's programs like this that bring out those future leaders. And it also brings out pioneers, people who are doing, my gosh, the stuff that you're doing with this. I love the idea that you're talking about with building that economic education for the youth. And my sister and I talked about this many years ago too, that is one of the problems, is that children they're not learning how to use money, how to plan money, how to save it, how to invest in it. It's investing in these types of projects that you're thinking about and you're putting into action, and you're here in graduate school to learn more, not for a degree necessarily, not for a career advancement. It's to do better in the world.
That's right.
If everybody had that mindset and that drive to be able to look at education, no matter what the education, finance, leadership, innovation, all of that, if everybody looked at education through that lens of wanting to just make the world a better place with what they're learning in the classroom, man, how far we get, huh?
I'm uniquely positioned to do it, you know, having been retired, settled, knowing what's important in life. But my mom, my late mom, shared something with me in my middle years of military. She says, when you wake up every morning, you have to have something to be enthusiastic about. Something. So I found that retirement was quite a journey, because you go from going 110 miles an hour in a 55-mile-an-hour zone to slowing down, because everybody says, I want to retire and do what I want to do and travel and do this. And I did that. I spent a year and a half just doing everything that I wanted to do. But I realized you have a lot left in the tank and you can give back. And what are you going to be enthusiastic about? And now I found that this is something that I'm enthusiastic about, giving back and using these processes, UMBC education and business opportunities as an entrepreneur to give back to society. So, yes.
Yeah, you've planted quite a seed. How do you want to show up in the world? I mean, to me, that's the phrase. When I'm listening to you, that's what I'm hearing in my head. How do you want to show up in the world? Because it's a choice in many cases. It is a choice to be able to say, how do I want to show up? How do I want to show up to this very moment, this very day? We all have that choice. And it's in taking those choices and having them guided by that principle is really enlightening and inspiring. And gosh, this was wonderful hearing this conversation, hearing your insights. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today. I'm so thankful that you were here, that we were able to get our technology. We had a couple of technological issues, but I'm so happy that we were able to square that away and we were able to have this conversation and that we'll be able to share this with others.
Well, my pleasure. My pleasure. And I thank you because I don't think I've ever had a chance to really articulate this except in snippets here and there. And you've helped me just think through it and go, wow, yes, this is powerful. Yes. And, you know, I did not know UMBC existed. I've only been in the area 6 years. We moved from New York and New Jersey here. We bought a place at National Harbor. I worked in D.C., Arlington, then D.C. And when I was looking for schools, I didn't know what to look for. I looked at the University of Maryland. I looked at all the D.C. schools and I looked around. And then this popped up, UMBC. And the only connection I had with UMBC was when you all beat Virginia in the NCAA tournament. That was it.
That was our moment.
Yes. And then I found out, wait a minute, this is an honored university that produces more, that provides more medical school students than any other school in the country. I think that's the reputation that I hear about. I don't know how accurate that is, but what a powerful institution it is. And then when I got on the inside, to see that it's first class in planning, organizing, managing. And then I see how Gib Mason, I guess it happened over time, how he has put together a program that goes beyond antiseptic academic teaching, where someone's been teaching for 30 years and that's all they've done is teach. Whereas, no, I'm going to bring in information and application, share lessons learned, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and empower entrepreneurs to do it right. Wow.
Yeah, when I talk to Gib, he is the most passionate person I think I've ever met. Aside from you, I mean, I'm saying you are full of passion. It just comes right through the screen right now. And Gib is the same way. He's got this passion for wanting to just give back to the students and teach everything he's learned and learn more even from the students. He's so open-minded like that. He's constantly says he's always learning from his instructors, the students, the people around him. And I just love that whole attitude. It's a winning attitude, and I'm so happy to be a part of it.
It is. It is.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of UMBC's Mic'd Up podcast. If you'd like to learn more about the Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Leadership Graduate Program at UMBC, visit eil.umbc.edu.